Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on hospitals when we come back. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it's regulated, in this case, by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about it is that you have no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of the above, and if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important, and it's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It's more binding, and it's more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And I'll bet you know less about that marriage contract than you do about your military obligation or your house payments. Now, about two-thirds of all marriages here in America end in divorce. But whether you're a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against any breach of this marriage contract. And that's why you ought to know and you ought to understand the terms and conditions of your marriage contract before you get married. And you ought to write that contract instead of letting the state write it for you. Now, whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD packet and let me share some vital information with you about the law and about that marriage contract. Just call us direct here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining. It's exciting. It's educational. It's informative. And best of all, it's free. You get online, you know, if you want to, and you can call us here with an email, georgegordon.org. Just get on the webpage there, or go to our webpage, rather, and it's georgegordon.org. It's easy to remember. And then click onto the email machine when you get there, and then send us an email, and we'll send you that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about hospitals. And the first segment, I said there's 10 things that the hospital won't tell you. So I told you what those 10 things were. And then I told you about the hospital dumping case, you know, and how the hospitals over here now offer socialized medicine. Congress has imposed socialized medicine on hospitals. It doesn't make any difference who you are, where you're at, whether you can pay or not pay. The hospital has to treat you, like it or not. Now, of course, the hospital has to pay for that. And then the hospital guy, the guy that's administering the hospital, the CEO, whoever it is, he's got to balance his books every month. He's in a profit-making business, just like the Lexus dealer. At the end of the month, the Lexus dealer has to take in more money than he paid out. It's a fundamental of business. You have to take in more money than you pay out. And you have to do that week after week, month after month, year in, year out. And if you don't do that, you will be out of business. And that's why I mentioned to you a time or two that the only function for business is to make profit. Business does not exist for any other purpose than making profit. Now, communists don't understand that. And it's understandable because communists aren't businessmen. Communists are not business people. Americans are not businessmen or business people. Americans are communists. And that's why they don't understand the fundamentals of business, and that is that business makes profit. Without profit, there's no business. And communists are the type of people that stand in line and share the shortage. It's the way it's always been, and we Americans are now getting an opportunity to see how communism really works. The other day I saw a piece in the paper, and they said that Congress is really upset about the higher and higher gas prices. I say what we need is more government intervention in the marketplace. You know, before government was dictating to the oil companies and dictating to you and me and everybody else, we had plenty of gasoline at affordable prices. Now we have a shortage of gasoline at unaffordable prices because we have lots of government regulations telling the oil companies how to make their gas and what their mixtures have to be in certain locations in the country and so on and so forth. And I say that, listen, boys and girls, if you don't think prices are high enough and if you don't think gas is plentiful enough, what we need is more government intervention. We need more controls. I think we need gasoline price controls. I mean, if you want to stand in line and share the shortage, bring on price controls. God bless them back there in Washington anyway. Well, it's kind of the way things are in hospital care. Now, I can remember when I was a kid, and I went to the hospital twice with pneumonia. I was about 4 or 5 years old, had pneumonia number one, and I spent a little stint in the general hospital there at, where is that hospital? 8th Street at Harris, I believe it is, in Eureka, California. And then at the old St. Joseph Hospital, it used to be, I don't know, they were over on I Street, was it? I, J, maybe? No, it wasn't I or J, it was over on G Street, I believe it was, G Street. And out around Carson Park, I remember that, and I spent about a week in there, and there was no shortage of facilities. We didn't have health insurance. No health insurance. Hospitals were affordable to working people. My dad was a working stiff, and when I had pneumonia, they took me to the hospital, spent a week in the hospital, and he paid the hospital bill with no insurance. Imagine a week in the hospital, and we had doctors, lots of doctors, oxygen tents, penicillin, all the good stuff. And we didn't have any problem paying the bill, and we didn't have health insurance either. Now, that was back in the 1940s and the 1950s. And then somehow or another, the government got involved. They said, well, we got to have more services. We got to have more government control over hospitals. Well, now we got government control over hospitals. And God, these hospitals are so expensive, you can't afford to go there. Why, if I had to go to the hospital, now my boy Dirk's got to go to the hospital. He's going to have his hip replaced. And we're going to pay for it, just cash. Just walk in the door and give them the money and walk out the door. But we negotiated the deal. It's about half what they normally charge, which leads me to ask the question, well, why in the hell are they overcharging to start with? Why is the hospitals of America charging $30,000 for a hip replacement when the real price, cash price, is $15,000? And you can go to India and have it done for $8,000. I mean, what's going on here? And then I think I shared this with you the other day, that if you walk into a hospital today, you're likely to be charged five times more for the services than an insurance company is going to pay if you walked in and had insurance. So you walk into the hospital, and this one guy did, he got a $21,000 bill, and then he settled the bill for about $4,000 or $5,000, or about 20%. Well, why did they charge $20,000 to start with? Well, last time I told you about hospital dumping. We have socialized medicine in America. Everybody in America, you can be a foreigner. I mean, you can be a pregnant woman in Guatemala. And if you've got a passport in Guatemala and you've got enough money for a plane ticket to Miami, and you can go into labor about the time you arrive in Miami, you can get free hospitalization. You can get your baby delivered in America, have an anchor baby, and have it paid for at taxpayer expense. Thank God for Congress. I love them. I love this communism, and I love socialism. I think it's the greatest thing since sliced white bread. I like to stand in line and share the shortage, don't you? Now, these hospitals over here have some other problems that I thought I'd bring to your attention. And here's an article on stay out of the hospital if you can, because hospitals are dirty cesspools of filth, disease, and germs. Did you know that? Yeah, hospitals are dirty, disease-infested institutions. Now, I can remember when hospitals were clean. I told you, I spent 2 weeks in the hospital on two different occasions. Nobody ever, that I ever heard of, ever went into a hospital and got an infection. Nobody had problems with bad drugs. Nobody had problems with the hospitals. The safest place in the community was the hospital. I mean, where could you be safer than in the hospital? Especially if you're sick. But hospitals aren't the same kinds of institutions that they used to be when I was a kid. No, I'm not, you know, running the hospital down, and I'm not building the hospital up. But I thought that you'd probably like to know where the state of the institution is today. I mean, you know, they used to be good places, and today they're bad places, but I didn't make it that way, so it's not my fault. I'm just a reporter here giving you the facts. So, you know, it says here, stay out of the hospital if you can, and then if you can't, have somebody with you at all times. My God, that's like going down to Skid Row. You know, stay out of Skid Row, but if you have to go down there, make sure you got somebody with you. I was listening to Terry Gross on Fresh Air today, and she had a terrifying show. She had investigative reporter Michael J. Behrens, who recently did a series on how infections in hospitals are rising rapidly and needlessly killing tens of thousands of patients each year, excerpts from his reporting on infections in 2000. Now, this is 7 years ago. In 2000, three-quarters of the deadly infections, 75,000, were preventable, the result of unsanitary facilities, germ-laden instruments, unwashed hands, and other lapses. Now, 100,000 people a year, they get various numbers. He's got 75. I read to you the other day, 90. And I've seen numbers that say 100. Now, when the hospital admits 75, 90, or 100,000 people are dying from preventable infections in the hospital, they're giving you the lowball number. Nobody in his right mind ever walks up and tells you the truth about all of the bad things that they've done. I mean, no, a whore doesn't come up to you and say, Jesus, I'm sleeping with a different John every night of the week. She'd say, well, I'm sleeping with a different guy two or three times a week, you know, or two or three times a month. She's never going to tell you the truth and give you the whole number. Most of us can handle it. So just taking the lowball numbers, you know, 75,000. Now, these are hospital infections. Now, these are not the iatrogenic diseases. Okay. So now, if you want to keep track of how dangerous this hospital is, you have a thing here called iatrogenic disease. That's called a doctor-caused problem, a doctor-caused disease. That's where you go in because you've got lung cancer in your left lung, and they cut out your right lung. That's iatrogenic disease, doctor-induced, doctor-caused disease. Okay. That's number one. Number two, there's the drug reaction death. That's where they don't give you cocaine. They don't give you heroin. They don't give you marijuana or crack or some illegal drug. These drugs are all legal, put out by GlaxoSmithKline, Pfizer, and Merck. And the doctor prescribes it. And after all, he's a trained professional. But because of his bad handwriting, the pharmacist misinterprets it. He puts the decimal place in the wrong place, and they give you 1 milligram instead of a tenth or something like that. And so you've got drug-induced deaths. So you got drug deaths, iatrogenic deaths, and then you've got infectious deaths. Infections. That isn't something that the doctor did to you. Well, necessarily. I mean, the doctor might not have washed his hands, and he might have been in some other patient's room and picked up some disease, came in and gave you this other patient's infection. I mean, that can happen. But it's typically done because the hospital's dirty. And that's because the hospital is working hard to cut costs. And the hospital has to work hard to cut costs and boost profits because they got to take care of 88,000 other people out here on the streets because Congress came in, remember, and passed this anti-dumping law and passed legislation that says if this guy has got a medical problem, you got to treat him in the hospital. What I don't understand is why Congress doesn't come along and pass a law that says if a person is walking, that the automobile dealer has to give him a car. Or if a person is homeless, the Holiday Inn doesn't have to put him in a room. I don't know why Congress hasn't gone that far yet. I'm sure that they'll get to it as soon as we elect Hillary. But meanwhile, back on the farm, we have told the hospitals, though, that if a guy's sick, you got to treat him. And so the hospital has to pay for that. And so they got to pay for it by jacking your bill up 5 times more than what it would be ordinarily. I mean, before we had Congress in investing and involving themselves in the hospitals, you know, we had affordable medical services in America. Today, they're not affordable. That's why you need insurance. And now the insurance isn't affordable because you got to take care of these 88,000 homeless people down on Skid Row in Los Angeles, California. The hospital has to do that as a matter of law. It's the law. See? Now, of course, we all know that that's necessary and imperative, and we all support that, and I don't deny it. But there's a problem that comes up from this, because the hospital now, they're cutting corners. Listen to this. Within the average U.S. hospital today, about half the doctors and nurses don't wash hands between patients. And a dozen recent healthcare studies show, in thousands of cases observed by federal or state inspectors, surgeons performed without washing hands or wearing masks. Investigators discovered fly-infected operating rooms where dust floated in the air during open-heart surgeries in Connecticut. Because of cost-cutting measures, U.S. hospitals have collectively pared cleaning staffs by 25% since 1995. During the same period, half the nation's hospitals have been cited for failing to properly sanitize portions of their facilities. Today, about 2.1 million patients each year, 6%, will contract a hospital-acquired infection among 35 million admissions annually, the CDC records show. You got that? That's 6%. Let's take 35. And let's just go times 0.06. That's 2.1 million. And out of 2.1 million people, about 100,000 of those are going to die. Let's just take 2.1 million. Let's take 100,000. 100,000. Let's divide that by 2,100,000. If I got that right, let me push my button here. That's a 4.7%. It's about 5%. That's about one person out of every 20. How do you like that, kids? You go to the hospital, and then you acquire an infection from the hospital. Now, I can remember going to hospitals when I was a kid. There was never any worry from anybody at any time. I never went into a hospital that was dirty. Never heard of such a thing. I mean, those hospitals were so clean. They had people over there that were just polishing and waxing and just working their hearts out, making this place just so clean that germs couldn't live there. Today, the hospitals are so dirty that if you go in there, you get a 5% chance of dying. Well, if you pick up an infection while you're in there. And so you got three potential killers. You got the doctor and iatrogenic disease. You got the drugs. They're going to give you the wrong drug in the wrong amount. And then you've got the infection problem. And here's what these people are killing. The iatrogenic disease over here, the doctors are killing 130,000 a year. Drugs are killing 100,000 a year. And they got 75,000 down here. I'm going to give you the lowball numbers. Now, these are what they admit to. Admit. I mean, it's kind of like the Catholic priests in Boston. They admit that one-third of them are pedophiles or sodomites. Okay. Now, that's the low-ball number because that's what they're admitting to. It's probably double that. And these numbers are probably double or triple or quadruple what we're giving you here. But let's just take these three numbers. We got 130, 175, that's 5, 10, 1, that's 305,000, rounded off to 300,000 people a year, die in our hospitals every year. 300,000. And all of these are preventable. Doctors could cut out the right lung instead of the left one. You know, I mean, oftentimes the doctors will go in and cut off the wrong leg, cut off the wrong arm, cut out the wrong lung. I know it sounds kind of crazy, you know, but I'm just pointing out to you that that's what's going on here. They call it iatrogenic. And then doctors have bad handwriting and they write out a prescription. The druggist can't read it. He gives you the wrong drug and it kills you 100,000 times a year here in America. And I'll bet it's about the same, you know, percentage-wise in Canada and Australia and Western Europe and China and every place else in the world. Now, here's the thing that was so shocking to me. If you took 300,000 people, let's just take 300,000 and plug it into my famous Sharp EL1197G3 Texas Instruments calculator. 300,000, let's divide that by 365 days. That's 821 people a day. That's two jumbo jets a day. That's two 747s crashing 365 days a year just in the United States of America. Boys and girls, 300,000 people. That's more people than died in all of World War II. Well, at least here in America. You know, our soldiers, I think we had total battle casualties of 200,000. 200,000. Hell, we kill 300,000 a year in our hospitals, for crying out loud. I haven't heard anybody get real excited about that. I haven't heard Katie Couric jumping up and down, pawing the ground, biting the bushes, you know, because 300,000 people are dying. Because, see, they all die one at a time, quietly in their hospital rooms. When a jumbo jet goes down, well, that makes a lot of noise. Makes a big fire. Makes a hole in the ground. People can get real excited about that. You know, the firemen can go in there and pull out the charred bodies and haul them away on litters. And that makes the 6 o'clock news. 800 people dying today in your hospitals from infections, iatrogenic disease, and bad drug overdoses. That doesn't make news. But I thought I'd report to you that if there's any way you can stay out of the hospital, you want to stay out of that place. That place is a place of death. That place is a place that's dangerous. Boys and girls, you stand a greater chance of dying in your doctor's office than you do on the streets of Baghdad. Do you understand that? Now, you know, people are jumping up and down, pawing the ground, biting the bushes, and getting real excited about that war in Iraq. Hell, those boys over there in Iraq, they're just as safe as a baby in his crib compared to you people going to the hospital. I mean, your chances of dying in a hospital are 10 times greater than they are on the streets of Baghdad if you were a soldier. So don't sit there and say, oh, my God, look at what's going on in Iraq. You need to be concerned about what the hell's going on down at the local doctor's office, the hospital, and the clinic. That's where people are getting killed. That's where people are dying that you didn't hear about. Now, there's a little bit more to the story. How bad does this have to get before we as a society want to do something about it? Well, Laurie Garrett wrote an excellent book about 5 years ago called The Coming Plague, Newly Emerging Diseases in a World Out of Balance, where she laid out this problem. There are lots of causes for the problem, but the biggest obstacle to fixing it is that the government permits hospitals to keep their infection rates secret. I don't care how laissez-faire you are, a market requires information to function. How many people do you think would go and have open heart surgery in a hospital where they knew 22% of the people who did so came down with an infection? Did you get that? All right, now you want open heart surgery and you're going to go to the hospital. 1 out of 5 is going to come down with an infection and 1 out of 5 is going to die. You want to go have your surgery this week or next? Now, let me give you that number again, kids. This isn't my number. This is your government at work. Here's your tax dollars at work. All right, tax dollars at work. You go into the hospital and you want open heart surgery. You got a 22% chance of coming down with an infection. That's 1 out of 5. 5 people go into the hospital. 1 of them gets an infection. Got that? All right. Now, just because you get an infection in the hospital doesn't mean you're going to die. But of those people who do get the infection in the hospital, 1 out of 5 of those is going to die. How's that? Now, I never heard of that when I was a kid. Nobody was ever concerned about hospital infections. The hospitals were clean and they weren't cutting their cleaning staffs down. Remember, when I was a kid, they had big cleaning staffs. But now they're cutting their cleaning staffs by 25%. Why? My God, why would you want to cut your cleaning staff in a hospital? It seemed like to me that the cleaning staff in a hospital is like a mechanic working in a shop. Why would you want to cut back on your mechanics? If you're running a shop, wouldn't you want more mechanics? I mean, I'll just throw that out for your consideration. You're running an auto shop and you're cutting back on your mechanics. How are you going to fix cars if you don't have mechanics? How are you going to keep your hospital clean if you don't have cleaning people? Well, we're not going to have a clean hospital because we're not going to have cleaning people. Oh, so we're going to have a dirty hospital where we do our open heart surgery. Especially when the hospital information is kept proprietary and the public health officials have been rendered increasingly powerless, hospitals versus as documented in Garrett's recent work. She wrote another book over here called Betrayal of Trust, The Collapse of Global Public Health. Both Garrett books are very well written and well documented, although very depressing. Highly recommended. All right, so if you want these two books, that ought to scare the living hell out of you. Both Garrett books. This is this lady's name now is Garrett, G-A-R-R-E-T. G-A-R-R-E-T. And she wrote two books. The Coming Plague, : Newly Emerging Diseases in a World Out of Balance. And the second book is called Betrayal of Trust, : The Collapse of Global Public Health. For the second part of the show, Terry Gross had Barron's talk about research that he has done on what the lack of nurses and their replacement with untrained $9 an hour nurses' aides is doing to healthcare and hospitals. Did you get that? Instead of nurses, we now have nurses' aides. Well, I wonder if nurses wash their hands more often than the nurses' aides, or I wonder if the nurses' aides are more prone to giving you the wrong drugs than are the nurses. I don't know. I'm just throwing the question out. Because the hospitals are cutting back on nurses and hiring nurses' aides at $9 an hour instead of paying a nurse 30 or 40. Well, I don't know if that's good for you or bad for you. It's a choice that the hospital makes. I don't know, does the hospital have to make it? The communists tell us, that is the communists in the news media and in our government, they tell us, it's these dirty capitalists in the hospitals, these profiteering hospitals, that are the problem. Hell, when I was a kid, a wage earner like my dad could afford to put his kid in the hospital, pay cash, have no insurance. We never had any adverse financial repercussions from those two hospital stays. I was in there a week both times. I can remember my mother went to the hospital, had a baby, and my daddy paid the bill, and he didn't have any adverse repercussions from it. I was born. We didn't have any health insurance in 1939. Hell, we were able to pay for it, and we didn't get infectious diseases, and we weren't writing books, you know, called Betrayal of Trust and the Coming Plague. We weren't worried about hospital nurses being in short supply, or nurses' aides, or cleaning staffs being cut back, but we are today. Now, boys and girls, we all have to make choices in life. Hospitals and the administration, they have to make choices. Investors who buy stock in hospitals, they have to make choices. You and I have to make choices, and these choices are being made every day. I pointed that out to you in the last program. And I would say that if you're going to require the hospital, if you're going to subsidize socialized medicine from the hospital, and you're going to make the hospital pay for 88,000 people, this is just in Los Angeles County. They got 88,000 homeless people. Congress says the hospitals in Los Angeles County have to care for those 88,000 people that don't have health insurance, don't have any money, and aren't going to pay the hospital a dime. Okay, fine, no problem. So where's the hospital going to get the money to care for those 88,000 people? They're going to get it by cutting back the nurses' staff and hiring nurses' aides at $9 an hour instead of $40. They're going to get it by cutting back the cleaning staff by 25%. That's two places. Oh, you say that's unacceptable. Okay, well, let's put you in charge. Why don't you tell us, well, what is acceptable? Why don't you tell us how to solve that problem? Why don't you take charge of it, Mr. President? That's where everybody in communist land goes. They go to the government to solve their problems. And that's why government charges twice as much to give you half as good a solution. Boys and girls, we had no hospital problems, no health care problems in America in 1939. None. Zero. Zilch. As long as the government is out of the business. Now, I heard the other day that government's going to get involved in the internet. They're going to start taxing it and controlling it. Okay. There's no problems with the internet today. If there are, I don't know what they are. We get our emails in here, and we ship out emails, and we get information. But let me tell you that over the next 20 years, when the government gets fully involved in the internet, and they regulate it, and they tax it, and they screw around with it, it'll perform half as well and cost twice as much. It's always been that way. Anytime government gets involved in any enterprise, you get half as good a service, and it costs you twice as much. And then if that isn't good enough and you need it fixed, they'll come in and charge you twice as much, and then it'll work half as well. And then if that isn't good enough, then go to the government and have them come in and fix that problem, and then it'll work half as well again and cost you twice as much. Pretty soon you're paying 10, 15, 20 times more than you are, and you get about one-tenth of the service that you had when you started. At some point in time, the thing just collapses, doesn't work anymore. And then people go back to doing what they were doing when they started this whole process all over again, and then it all works well again. As long as people are doing it, it works well. When government does it, it works poorly. And that's what you got here with your hospital problem. You got government intervention, and government intervention has caused a problem. So the problem now needs to be solved by more government intervention. That problem will result in more problem, which then will require more solution, which in turn will create more problem, which in turn will create more solution, which in turn will create more problem, which in turn will require more solution, which in turn. All right, I'm going to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in total. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, history, health, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements are recommendations that we give. don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile or political or religious, economic or sectarian, racial or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station or of your local fellow communists. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about hospitals. Stay out of the hospital if you can. The time was when the hospital was the safest place in town. Today, it's no longer true. Hospitals are dangerous places. And if you're going to go to the hospital, you need to take precautions. Certain precautions need to be taken to protect you from drug or bad drugs or drug overdoses or the wrong drugs. Remember, when you're in the hospital, you're probably not the person who's going to be conscious enough to be evaluating what's going on around you. So you need somebody there so that when they're hooking up your IV, you make sure that the IV that they're hooking up for you isn't the one that was intended for the guy across the hall, or that the IV that they're hooking up for you isn't the wrong medicine, which is going to kill you or may kill you or injure you through iatrogenic disease. Remember, 300,000 people a year die in our hospitals. And all 300,000 of these are preventable deaths. And that's the low ball figure. It's probably two or three times that number. But, and I'm just using the numbers that the hospitals admit to. That's what they're admitting to. And there's three basic problems. Bad drugs, bad doctors making bad decisions called iatrogenic disease, and infection. So you may get an infection, you may get a bad drug, or you may have a doctor cut out the wrong lung. Now those are problems that you face. So in order to solve that cutting the wrong lung out, you know, before you go in, you need to remind the doctor, doc, it's the left lung. It's the left lung, not the right lung. Left. When you're facing me, doc, and when you're standing behind me, they're opposite. So let's put a great big X on the side that you're going to operate on. It's my left lung. The lung on the side where my heart is located. That's the lung we're cutting out. That's the lung that's got the tumor in it. Okay, doc? All right, and you want to have the doc do that on Monday morning when he's not bothered by his being in a hurry to get out of town on Friday afternoon. You don't want this operation Friday afternoon. You want it Monday morning. Now, if your doctor's an alcoholic, which half of them are, if they're not alcoholics, then they're on some kind of illegal drug, then maybe you want the doctor to do the job on Tuesday so he has Monday to sober up from the weekend. I mean, there's these iatrogenic problems. And then you want to have somebody like your wife or your husband or your brother or your sister or somebody in the hospital who's looking at the chart over the nurse's aide, because that nurse's aide may be coming from the Philippines and don't read English and none too good, you know? And so the nurse's aide comes in and gives you the wrong amount of drugs or too much drugs or too much of the wrong kind of drugs, or they hook up the wrong catheter. And you want to make sure that they're washing their hands and that they're clean. You know, where'd you just come from? Well, I came from next door where the guy's got HIV AIDS. Did you wash your hands? Oh, no, I didn't. Well, would you please wash your hands before you touch my brother? These are little things here, boys and girls, that kill 300,000 people a year. That's 2 747 loads a day. And that's just in the United States. I don't know what the hell's going on in Canada or Australia or France or North or South Korea, but it's probably just about as bad there as it is here. And if you've got socialized medicine, you can be assured that it's as bad there as it is here. And most countries have socialized medicine. We Americans have socialized medicine, but we're ashamed of it, and we don't want to call it that. So we call it free enterprise over here. Now, for the second part of the show, Terry Gross had Barron's talk about research that he's done on what the lack of nurses and their replacement with untrained $9 an hour nurses' aides is doing to healthcare and hospitals. Even more terrifying, this one chilled me to the bone, probably because I experienced something like it. Since 1995, at least 418 patients have been killed, 1,356 others injured by registered nurses operating infusion pumps, which regulate medicine flow. In each of these cases, the nurse either lacked the training to operate infusion pumps or claimed to be burdened by too many other patients. The pumps can be misused in several ways, and sometimes nurses punched in the wrong amount of medicine on the built-in touchpad. Calculation errors are so prevalent that some nurses called them death by decimal. I'm going to underline that. Death by decimal. Now listen, let me explain that one to you. You walk into the hospital room and there's this stand over here with an IV drip. And it's plugged in to your husband's arm. And it's computerized. And so they just dump in, you know, 3 ounces or whatever they need of heroin or cocaine or whatever they're giving your husband to make him feel good. And they just punch in the decimal. Well, every hour, you know, a drop or two goes into his IV fluid and it goes into his body and everything's going fine. So the nurse comes in. Now, maybe she's been working two shifts. Maybe she's at the end of her second shift. She's been on here now for 15 straight hours. And this girl's tired. She's tired. People get that way. Now, truck drivers, we make them stop and rest. We make them keep a log book. Airline pilots, we make them retire at age 60. We make them keep a logbook. We make them rest. They can't fly 16 hours nonstop. Nurses can, doctors can, interns can. And those people come in, and now they've got to punch in, you know, like 3.3366 into this computer. And if they make a mistake, it's called death by decimal, and they punch in the wrong numbers because the doctor, the nurse, the intern, whoever's doing this is a little punchy because he's been working for the last 16, 18, 24, 30 hours straight. He kills your husband because you're not there paying attention, ladies. So wake up, pay attention. Ask questions like, hey, doc, how much of that heroin are you giving him? Well, we're giving him the 16 milligrams per hour. Oh, okay. How come you punched in 60? Oh, did I punch in 60? Oh, let me correct that mistake. I mean, you could save somebody's life. That's why they're telling you. If you're going to the hospital, make sure that you got somebody there. Because, you know, when you're being fed narcotics, you're not the guy to be making these kinds of decisions when you're knocked out cold and just had open heart surgery. Somebody needs to be there to make sure that the nurse isn't screwing up. Now, it's true, it only killed 1,356 people, but that's just one way that they kill you. I mean, there's 150 ways to get killed in the hospital. And in this article, it just pulls this one out of thin air. It says, since 1995, 418 patients have been killed and 1,356 others injured by registered nurses. Not nurses' aides, not by dingbats, not by untrained people. These are very skilled people. But, you know, when a nurse has been on duty, you know, for 16 straight hours, and she comes in, she's a little punchy. Maybe it's Friday afternoon. She's in a hurry to get the hell out of here because she wants to go up to Lake Shasta, you know, do a little water skiing over the weekend. You know, she might punch in the wrong numbers. Tuck it away in your heart. Terry then had two experienced nurses on the show share some of their horror stories of what it was like working in hospitals today and how hard it was to do a good job, even with the best of intentions, and how that was driving nurses out of the hospitals. Both nurses said that when they had to go into the hospital, they had shifts of friends with them so that they had around-the-clock coverage by somebody looking out for them, and said that would be their number one piece of advice to patients. Always have somebody with you 24 hours a day and have them double-check everything that's going on. All right, now let me read that back to you again. Here's two nurses that work in the hospital. You got that? Two nurses. Not nurses' aides, not dingbats, not cleaning personnel. These are two registered nurses. They come on the air and they say, listen, if you've got somebody that's in the hospital, let me give you a piece of advice. Number one piece of advice to patients. You must always have somebody with you 24 hours a day in the hospital room and have them double check everything that's going on in that room. My God, that's better coverage than you get in prison, for crying out loud. And that's two nurses now that said you ought to do that, because if you don't, then you're going to have your husband or your wife or your child or somebody killed in the hospital or injured. You know, maybe they won't kill you. Maybe they'll just injure you. The radio show really struck me, and I've blogged on longer than I usually do, probably because I had a personal experience with this kind of problem, where I was not given the right medication by a nurse after surgery. The nurse spoke very limited English and refused my request to have the doctor summoned. Then she managed to knock over the monitor on the table next to my bed, so she disconnected it. I spent a night in agony and fear. It brings chills to my spine just remembering it. I wonder how bad will we let our healthcare systems get before we really start addressing some of the root causes, such as how it's financed. If our public schools are any indication, we will let it get pretty bad. Not a very cheery thought. Boys and girls, your hospitals run just like your public schools, just like all of your governmental public institutions. It runs poorly because government's involved in it. That's what your problem is. It's government involvement in the hospital. All right, so now I gave you the story. I gave you the warning there. Now, if you've got somebody in the hospital, like we've got a boy who's going to go to the hospital for this hip replacement surgery, and when we go there, there will be somebody in his room 24 hours a day for his hospital stay. And we will be sober. We will not be drinking. And we will be watching every nurse that comes in. And we will be looking at the charts. And we will be asking doctors and nurses questions. We will be saying to them, is that the right medication? What is the medication? What is the medication for? Double check it. And then we will be keeping a journal and a log. And if my boy dies in the hospital or is injured, you may rest assured that litigation will surely follow. And it will be well documented, hour by hour. There will be a journal written. And I will have the names, the dates, the times, the places, the facts, the witnesses, and the evidence. And I'm going to let the doctor and the nurses all know that I'm here and that I'm a law school professor. a teacher, and that I'm here with the express purpose of suing you. If you screw up, rest assured, litigation will surely follow. And that keeps people on their toes. And after all, that's what we want. I don't want to sue the hospital. I don't want my boy dead. I don't want $5 million for his dead body. I want my boy to go to the hospital, have the necessary surgery. I want him to come back out alive, uninjured, healthy. I want the job to go right. Now, these kinds of jobs that we have, the medical services and the medical profession that we have here in America is a hell of a program. I mean, you stop and think about hip replacement surgery. You think about heart transplant. You think about the care that can be given in our hospitals. Hell, it's wonderful. It's just the greatest thing since sliced white bread. You know, if you need it and you have to have it, I don't recommend it, but then, you know, if you have to have it, laser surgery on your eyes. I mean, you know, we can remove cataracts and restore your vision. I think that's great. But getting killed in the process ain't so great. Getting injured in the process, that's not so good. And there's a cause and effect relationship that goes with that. Now, when somebody knows that that you're watching them, they're a lot more careful. I mean, it's just the way life is. When somebody is asking, is that the right medicine? Is that what the doctor ordered? Is it the right amount? And the nurse looks at it a second time. You know, even if she's punch drunk after 16 hours, yeah, it says so right here on the chart. He's supposed to be given Demerol, and, or he's supposed to be given heroin, or he's supposed to be getting morphine, and here's the amount. Is that the correct amount? Nurse, how much morphine does it take to kill somebody? Oh, my God, this is enough to kill somebody. Oh, the decimal's in the wrong place. Well, thank you. I'm glad we figured that out before we gave it to him rather than after we gave it to him, and now we're in heroic measures trying to save his life because we gave him 10 times more than he was supposed to have. You know, tuck it away in your hearts. I'm just telling you. This is what professionals in the business are telling you. I'm just a crummy reporter reporting to you that the nurses say if they had somebody in the hospital, they'd have somebody there 24/7 watching over them, checking on the nurses to make sure. You know, the nurse from the Philippines, she's probably a good girl, speaks Spanish, doesn't speak too good English, and maybe can't read English very well. And she's probably a good nurse from Manila, but is she a good nurse for Boston, Philadelphia, or Los Angeles? And if there's some girl comes into my boy's room and she don't speak too good English, you can rest assured that I'll be raised in hell. Don't have anything against Spanish nurses. I'm just sitting here telling you that Spanish nurses are probably real good in Spain, but that don't mean that they're real good in Boston or Springfield, Missouri. Not with my boy. Now, doctors scrawl handwriting on the wall. You know, healthcare providers' compliance behavior is revealed by this headline from another newspaper article by Renee Sanchez in the Washington Post, dated May 16, 2000. Folklore has it that physicians' handwriting is notoriously bad, and with the increased importance of prescription medicines in treating diseases of every sort, poor penmanship increases the probability of fatal medication errors. Poor penmanship increases the probability of fatal medical errors. Well, you know, anybody can make a mistake. But doctors have poor handwriting. So let's make sure that when the doctor writes out the prescription and hands it to you, you look at it, and if you can't read it, what in the hell makes you think that the pharmacist can read it? Read it back to the doctor and say, okay, doc, it calls for 10 milligrams per hour of this particular drug, and that's spelled, and it's spelled. And you got to spell it out because a lot of these drugs will just have one or two letters different in the spelling of the drug. One or two letters. You know, it's like there, T-H-E-I-R and T-H-E-R-E. You know, it can get that close, and the difference can make the difference between life and death. And boys and girls, 130,000 people a year die in our hospitals because of the wrong drug or the wrong dosage of the right drug. Now, you know, if you don't really care a lot about somebody and you're going into the hospital, don't be concerned about this. You don't need to. I mean, after all, if you're not real concerned about it, why would you be concerned about whether the doctor is concerned? You can rest assured that the doctor isn't near as concerned about your kid as you are about your kid. Now, if you're not too concerned about your kid, then you can rest assured that the doctors and the nurses won't be any more concerned than you are. Now, I'm real concerned about mine, so I'm going to be real, real careful about making sure that when the doctor writes out the prescription, that my boy reads it and spells it out and makes sure, now, that's the right stuff, right, doc? Because if it's the wrong stuff, there's going to be litigation here. They went over this with the blood. They went over this with the medications. They went over it with the hospital stay. They went over it with the type of hip that they're going to replace it with. The doctor is well experienced. The hospital is well experienced. The procedure has been done thousands and thousands of times with perfect results. And we want our boy to have the same perfect result as has occurred thousands and thousands of times. We don't want the bad results that occur from time to time because the nurse has been on duty for 16 hours and she's punch drunk. We don't want the bad result that comes from a Friday afternoon operation. That's just the way life is. Choices have to be made. and you make your choices beforehand. You make sure that this ship has got lifeboats on it. How many people are going to be on this boat? How many spaces are there available on the lifeboats? How experienced is this crew? How experienced is this captain? You know, Carnival cruises go out every Wednesday, and very seldom do they sink. But once in a while, they get a fire on board the ship. Once in a while, the ship actually sinks. You know, if I'm out here on a boat, you know, I want, where are the life preservers? Where are the lifeboats? Where's my lifeboat? What number is my lifeboat? How far is that from my stateroom? How do I get from where I am on this ship to where my lifeboat is? How do I get my life jacket? To hell with everybody else on the boat. Let them worry about their life jackets. Let them worry about their place. I'm concerned about mine. I go into a hotel, I look on the chart, and I says, well, where are the exits? I want to know where in hell the exits are. Oh, he's going to put me on the first floor. That way I don't need to be concerned about the exits. I take a chair, throw it through the window, and jump out. But you know, when you're on the second, third, or the 27th floor, I remember one time I was over in Hawaii, and I was up on the 21st floor. God, I was as nervous as a whore in church for the whole stay. If this thing catches on fire, I will be in the towering inferno. So these are just a couple of three pieces of advice and a couple of three problems that you have with the safest institution in your town, your hospital. How do you like it, kids? I'm about out of time again. I'm just having a good time here, and you look at the clock, and all of a sudden we're running out of time. So let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about hospitals. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends. We'll be right back.